they have become professionals, you can't handle them anymore. I'm telling you. Because now, professional, that means I'm professional in everything. I can what? Manage my life the way I want. So if I, even if I don't want to see any member of the family anymore, I don't want. So it's not me and my girlfriend and then, or me and my boyfriend, or me and my wife, or fierce. Before you know it, they are out of the hook. They don't care about their brothers, don't care about their sisters. It's only the new person they have formed, who is their new friend or their new partner, their wife or their husband, that they click over there, and that is a done deal. So when they like, they can come and share birthday with others. If they don't like, they just turn their own. May God be merciful. So I can imagine what this man went through. I can imagine what this man had been through. I can imagine how this man was in a place called Bethesda, House of Mercy. Still, it was like mercy was denied to him. May the Lord show compassion to you. May the Lord show mercy upon you. May the Lord come to your aid before you throw in the towel. May Jehovah, the God who say, I see the tears in your eyes, may he wipe it away. May he show you mercy. That God who say, weeping may have endured for the night, but joy cometh in the morning. May you be the one that God wants to wipe away his tears. May the God of mercy find you before the month of October finishes, in the mighty name of Jesus. May Jehovah show mercy unto you. The Bible say, where this man was in a house, in a pool called Bethesda, in the Aramaic language, which means house of mercy. And what is mercy? Mercy is an unmerited favor. What you didn't desire coming unto you. What you never expected coming unto you. That is what mercy is all about. This man found himself where people who are halt, where people who are blind, where people who were deaf, where people who have one infirmity or the other, people who are impaired, people who are not complete. That was where they are being dumped, in this pool of Bethesda. That from time to time, a certain angel will come and stir up the waters. And whosoever becomes the first who enters that water will be made whole. And such a place the man has stayed for 38 years. Nobody thought about him. This is to tell you the wickedness of this world. People will come, they will carry their loved ones, they will come, they will do everything to make sure that they are alert to see when the angel comes in, set up, wow, they're pushing their loved ones, and their loved ones have been made up. And that guy had no one. Nobody sympathized. Even those who came for their own family folks, when their family have been made up, they couldn't remember that man. They couldn't remember to say, let's stay extra 2 days. Probably this man, the angel is going to come again. For the sake of this man, we met this man here before we came, and now we are going, this man is still here. Beloved, 38 years. But the man did not move. The man remained there. The man was steadfast. The man remained there. The man trusted that one day there will be an end to his infirmity. May that be your portion. That the circumstances you've been through will not make you to renounce God, but that you will keep holding on to him who is able to show mercy unto you. The Bible tells us that God is full of compassion, and one of the nature of God is being merciful. God can never see his children going through sufferings without turning his face to show mercy. That was why when Jesus visited that place, Jesus saw the man. Jesus knew the man. Jesus was the one who started the discussion with him. Would you be made whole? And the man began to rattle, and the man began to speak all manner of pain that was in his heart. I had nobody. By the time I could come, another person had pushed his own family member, and then I have nobody to help me. Jesus finished listening to that, and Jesus said, rise! Today is the end to this spirit of infirmity that have held you. And that was how this whole thing happened. And the Lord had mercy upon him. And the Lord showed compassion upon him. And the man was made whole. Now, let me show you some areas where you must need mercy. You are listening to me, and then you may say, and what is she really talking about? I don't have any infirmity that have weighed me down for all of these years. I don't think I'm part of what she's preaching. Yes, 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 you are. You need to ask God to show you mercy so you can what? Have manifestations. Mercy to manifest. There are people who God is doing a lot in their lives, but they are so weak that they cannot manifest. Your meds are manifesting, but you can't manifest. You have no evidence to what God has done in your life. You can't show. You don't have any ability to show, to tell some people, these are your testimonies. Because others are packing and having testimonies, but you cannot manifest. You've not been able. You have not been able to manifest. Something is hijacking your testimony. Something is hindering you from manifestation. If you be that person, today you have to pray for God to show you, give you mercy for manifestation. How would other people be manifesting and you cannot manifest? How would your mates be manifesting and you cannot manifest? How would your colleagues be manifesting? Oh, may the Lord make you not to be somebody that is denied. Manifest in Jesus' name. In your time, let there be manifestation. May nothing hinder you. May nothing stop you from manifestation. So I hear you. You need mercy for the new. New things are happening every day. And why are you still in the old? Why is it that you cannot see the new? Why is it that new things cannot come around you? Why is it that new members cannot come to your ministry? Why is it that new things cannot happen around you and your household? What is holding you from manifesting the new? What is making you not to be smart enough to adapt to the new? There are people, I still see them. As much as the society is dynamic, they have refused to be dynamic. As far as things are happening, they have refused to change. They don't change, they don't want to change. So you still see them, others are carrying the Android, others are carrying the iPhone, but these ones are still carrying those little, listen. Why? Because they will tell you, I don't know how to switch over to the new. May the Lord be merciful. And because they have not been able to manifest the new, that's why they can't use WhatsApp. That's why before you call them today in Africa, you will still go to the old method. When WhatsApp and all the social media have made it possible for us to even be having some free calls. May the Lord give you mercy for the new. Hallelujah. Mercy against repeated battles. Some of you have repeated battles. Every time you keep fighting one battle or the other, you need mercy to overcome. You need mercy to jump across. You need mercy for God to catapult you from where you've been repeating and repeating to where that battle will become a thing of the past. I hear you. You need mercy to stand. Say mercy to stand. You got to stand firm. Many of you are so weak you cannot stand. But because of my time, I'm running up now. I want to stop in this one. But tell the Lord, give me mercy to stand. Say, Lord, I need mercy to stand. You need to stand. You can't be a yo-yo. Oh, whatever habit that have encroached into your life, making you not to stand, may its power be broken. In the name of Jesus.
I say, let God show you mercy before the month of October is over. Oh, may He show you mercy. God, show somebody mercy right now. I plead for mercy over my life, over my own household. I ask you for mercy in this place right now. Let anyone who have heard me receive that mercy. In these areas I've made mention about, and even beyond, let mercy find them. In Jesus' mighty name, we just give Him the prayer. Say a beginning. This has come to you from Archbishop Dr. Helen Duncan. Yes, you heard me well. I am of Rivers of Life Bible Church. Please, we meet every Sunday at 10 o'clock in Rigersmos. I look forward to seeing you. In case you still need more, please contact me on 06-84-606-550. God richly bless you. And keep listening to Radio Voice of Niger. We are on top.
Welcome to Radio Voice of Niger, Pan-Africa Media. Well, we are right now on air, 105.3 MHz on ETA. Also streaming live on the internet via salto.nl/razo. Well, we have a special program for you right now. Wherever you are, please just stay put and pull others in. Let them join us. Let's have fun together. Okay. This morning we're going to talk about politics, and we have some great, great guys in the studio. We want to talk about politics because some people say politics doesn't matter to them. They don't want to deal with politics. But like I heard Honorable Dosida always say, politics will deal with you. So it's my pleasure this morning to welcome you. You are listening out there, driving to work or even at work or at home. Welcome to the show. Excellent. So this morning we're going to talk about the upcoming parliamentary elections, the way they come as we know it, in November 2020. 22nd, there will be elections. And it's a very crucial one because the political landscape, there's a lot of fragmentation. And so we want to, make sure that the whoever gets elected or the government that we have will truly represent the interests of the people. And because of that, we need to get everybody involved so they can participate and give their franchise so we can have a good government. But to help to make the issues that are pending clear, we have some great politicians in the studio with us to talk about this. I have in the studio late this morning a very special lady. She's become a good friend and acquaintance of ours. It's called Miss Astrid Ploeger. She is from the Volt Partai. Astrid, can you say hello to our listeners if you can hear me?
Sorry, I can't hear her too well.
You can hear me too well.
It's a bit echoey,
this
sound. Is
my connection bad? It's echoing a bit. That is possible. Anyway, go ahead. Say hello if you can. Say here. Otherwise, okay. All right. Let's get back to Astrid later. Now, I want to ask Honorable Don to maybe say hello to our listeners and then we'll kick off from there. Can you hear us, Don?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Yes, yes.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Don Peter. I'm a current parliament member for the parliament, the Christian Union, and also this elections. I'm eligible to run on the third place, so that's an eligible place. I live in Amsterdam Southeast. I was born and raised here, and before my duties as a parliament member, I was also a lawyer in the same area. So when it comes to legal issues and matters, poverty issues, also migration, those are my specialties. And I'm looking forward to have this debate with Astrid to see how we can also share our views on certain topics.
Beautiful, beautiful. So I have some echo here. Okay, sorry, we're having a little bit of echo as well. We want to have this debate because it's important to educate people who are in Amsterdam so they understand the issues that are playing out when it comes to the elections. And so the purpose of this broadcast is to... Can you mute your... Yeah, you're muted. You're muted. Okay, I'm not sure. Maybe. Yeah. Whoa. Technical hitches, sir. Okay. All right. So we want to try and discuss some of the key issues that are playing out in the election this year. And that's why we have this guest. I'm sorry we have a bit. Hopefully we'll solve it as we go along. I don't know where this echo is coming from. Okay. Okay, let's kick off. First of all, I want to throw the question to Minister Don, to Honorable Don, say that what is it about the current immigration policy which caused the government of Prime Minister Rutte to fall? If you can clarify that for us.
As many of you know, it was a part of the cabinet, and we had some negotiations concerning migration policies, but some of the parties, the VVD, they wanted to take it further to a point that when a refugee comes, that they can no longer bring their children with them. So they have to wait a couple of years. But this situation is damaging for the children who have to stay behind. It's also damaging for the integration, and it's also damaging as what we think is important as the family. Because as a Christian Union Party, we think the family is a very important part of society. So in the discussions and the negotiations, we saw that we as a Christian Union, we cannot agree on strict migration policies which would separate the children from their parents.
So we held our grounds, and that's when the VVD decided that they wanted to break the cabinet. So that's why we have new elections, because also as a Christian Union, we stood strong on our migration policies, yes. But most importantly, also our being a party that values family. And by separating the families here for a long period, this for us was unacceptable.
Yes, yes. Quite pathetic. I think we'll hopefully we will be able to dig into some of these issues further. Astrid, perhaps you want to give your take on the issue. You want to add to what Don has said? You're muted. You're muted now. Yeah.
I also think the VVD collapsed the government as a decoy for to have, because there were things that are nitrogen crisis that are more pressing, and he thought it was a good time to have more election or to have another kind of government to solve or not solve the nitrogen problems. Because migration is only, refugees are only 9% of the current there are only 9% of the people who are coming to this country every year. So it's really only a small amount of refugees who are coming here every year, and the families who are coming after them, that's even less. So there's absolutely no reason to collapse this government over migration.
Yeah, I realized that other parties were not really happy with the fact that they, the government had to be just collapsed just because of that issue. So I think I agree with you on that point. Don, did you also feel it was proper to just bring down the government just because of the difference over that issue?
Yes, it was very irresponsible, and it did not serve the benefits of the country because of the elections. Now we have a lot of topics that are standing still, that are on pause. Yeah. When it comes to housing, when it comes to healthcare, even when it comes to migration, you're seeing everything is being hold now. It's on a pause, and it was not the responsible thing to do to break with the cabinet. So for me, it also feels like it was a party motive.
Yeah.
Not the country motive. And I do think what this country needs now is parties that think of the benefit of the country and not of the party of themselves first. So I think this is a very good time also to separate parties who think about themselves, but also parties who were willing to even let go of some of their points, but in the benefit of the country.
Yeah, that is, So in that regard, we could say, whatever happened, maybe it wasn't optimal, but okay, it still gives us an opportunity to reset, press the reset button to get things going, hopefully in a better direction. Yeah. Well, listeners, we are right now live. If you have a remark or question, you can give us a call on the studio line. That is 020-737-1301, and you can engage our guest this morning. I see also that many of the ministers, a couple of notable ministers also decided to drop out of politics with the fall of this government. I kind of found it strange because I don't think I've seen anything like that before, but quite a number of them. Yeah, what is your take on that? I mean, it's kind of a bit surreal, I would say. Any of you can pick that up.
Yeah, maybe I can answer that.
Yeah.
I think you see a lot of people, parliament members, also cabinet members, who have decided not to continue.
Yeah,
I think it also shows that there's a lot of pressure nowadays on the parliament, on politics, that we cannot take for granted that we live in a democratic society. But there's a lot of pressure from groups, from people, people who are not only complaining, because that's okay, but people are also being threatened nowadays as parliament members, cabinet members.
Right.
And think for the safety of their family, of themselves. And a lot of people think that these times have been very, very threatening also. So we're living in the time where it's very important to decide which way we want to go, because being a democratic, peaceful nation it's not to be taken for granted. It's something that we all have to work on. Oh, we all have to vote to make sure that that is the way that we express the way we think about politics, not through threatening, not through other ways. But you see that people are taking matters into their own hands on a lot of topics. So I think that's also one of the key things that has played with a lot of parliament members and cabinet members, which has made them decide to stop.
Yeah, but as far as I know, not everybody, not all of them really had their lives threatened, you know, and for that reason, for the safety of their families, they decided to pull the plug. But for the others, I'm not sure whether unless they're just tired of the whole thing. Yeah. Astrid, you can come in anytime, okay?
All right, yeah. Sir. Yeah, I think the pressure of the workers as a parliament member is also really, really high. I mean, there are a lot of smaller parties who have like this incredibly pressure of having to do all the debates, having to do all the motions, having to read all the stuff. So that's part of the problem as well, is that the pressure of work. Oh. Oh my God, he left me.
he's coming back, I think.
I think the pressure of those of the work is too much. If you look at the last day of the last day of their debate,
yes,
they continue to deepen the night and having all these motions. And if you're a smaller party, that's just too much. Mm-hmm. I think we should increase the number of seats in the second chamber to decrease the work pressure, and I think that would benefit the politics as well, because then you can go deeper into topics and not doing a little bit of every topic.
Okay, Don, do you agree with what Astrid is saying, that increasing the number of seats that might help to deal with all the issues being tackled?
Yes, for some part. As a matter of fact, Volt, her party, and our party, the Christian Union, they have a plan together to enlarge the number of seats from 150 to, I believe, 250.
Wow.
Yes.
And so we have a partnering plan together, because when you look at all the other governments or parliaments in Europe, ours is the smallest compared to the number of people who live in the country.
Yes.
But there is rarely... There is relatively a lot of work and pressure on a single parliament member compared to other countries. So this is something that we have planned out. Mm. It does take a change in the constitution, so it will take many years to reform it.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good time to change it. I don't think it will solve all the problems, but I do think this is a very healthy way to ensure that the parliament members can really focus on specific specialties where they can excel and make sure that they can have plans that are beneficial for the whole country.
Yeah. Thank you, Astrid, so much for mentioning that, to bring that up. You know, I didn't know that was an issue, that we need to increase the number of seats in parliament to help optimize the functioning of the parliament. Okay, so now let's touch on the issue which led to the fall of the government. The family reunion issue, I think the number of people getting reunited with the families, especially for the asylum refugees, I think that really became the point of disagreement or something like that. What is your party stand? I want to first of all ask Astrid, what is your party stand on this issue, the family reunion issue, which will become the lightning rod?
Yeah, it's very simple. We signed treaties to give refugees the right to reunite with their families. So you don't sign a treaty lightly. You can't say, well, it doesn't, I don't like it anymore, so I just don't do it anymore. We have in the EU, we have rules, we have agreements, we have treaties. So you just have, that's just the law. You can't say we don't allow refugees to reunite with their families. It's inhumane as well, of course, but it's also something you cannot do, because we, in the EU, we made agreements about that.
But do you have
You're muted.
Yes, can be muted.
Yeah.
Do you have specific number of refugees that's supposed to come in within a year or two in a country?
No, we don't.
If the numbers are not being specified, And then refugees are just trooping in. Don't you think that it will outweigh the number of people who are?
Well, they haven't floated in. People keep saying that, that the country is going to be overflooded with refugees, but it's only like 9% of the arbeids migration. It's a much larger number to for labor, that migration for labor here. So those are the biggest numbers of people who come here. And what we think as Volt, that the solution lies in Europe. You need to be united as Europe. You need to have some, and on the outer borders, you need to have some refugee center where you can humanely let the people in, let them apply for asylum, and then spread them throughout all the countries in Europe. So every country in Europe needs to do a share, because yes, you can't refuse refugees who are running from war and hunger. You can't let them die in the sea. You can't let them die, let them be shot in our outer borders, or let children drown. So the only solution, and we are fought as a European party, the only solution for the migration problems lies in Europe.
I think you've mentioned a very important point. I mean, the whole discussion has been skewed. Towards refugees and all that. But you mentioned a very important point. The labor migrants are also added to the number. And nobody talks about that.
Yeah. And those people are coming here legally. They're coming here because we have a Schengen agreement. Yeah. And they come here because we need the workforce.
Yeah.
So the refugees are only like a small amount of the total.
Wow, it's amazing. The whole discussion is skewed towards migrants and making them look so bad and making them look like, oh, they're the ones causing the problem. Of course, we know there's associated issues, housing and the rest of it, but...
Okay. But that's also a negative frame, because only 9% of the houses goes to people who have a refugee background.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rest just goes, we have a housing shortage, I agree, but the refugees are not the cause of it. The houses are not going to the refugees, only 9% of them are.
Yeah.
So 81% just goes to people who need them. The problem is that we don't have enough houses.
Mm. Yeah, Don, maybe you want to add to what she has said.
Yeah, I think she made a good point. It's our party and myself, I've been very vocal about the false narrative that has been spread that the refugees are a major cause of a lot of problems. Mm. But when you look at the actual numbers, it's not true.
Yeah.
From all the people that come in the Netherlands, I think around 10% are refugees.
Wow.
But they make it the big issue.
Exactly.
And let's say you would reduce the number of refugees to zero next year, then there would still be
Wow.
So I think that's something that parties need to talk the truth about. We do see is that, yes, we do need people for the labor market.
Yeah.
But our party has said this, that we cannot host people from the EU, from Poland, from other countries. We cannot keep doing that while prohibiting people who are in the Netherlands from participating in work. It's not the right. It's not the right approach.
Yes,
I know from living in Southeast, we have many thousands and thousands of children or people who are adult now who have been living in the Netherlands for many years. Yes. Some of them are even born here.
Yeah.
But because of their status, they cannot work.
Yes.
And that amounts to thousands. And they speak the Dutch language. They went to school. They even have an Amsterdam accent.
Yeah.
So they understand everything. They understand every part of society. But this government prohibits them from working. And when they turn 18, the only message they have is, you need to go to your country, a country where a lot of them have never been before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what we are saying is that if you want to look at the labor market, first of all, we have to be honest.
Yeah.
One of the things that we need to address is that there are a lot of people here that have illegal status.
Yeah.
but have been here for so many years, contributing to society. Yeah. There are children, they have an education, they have the Dutch language, mm-hmm. they contribute to society.
Right.
Stop with prohibiting them to work, mm-hmm. let them work. And if then there's still a shortage of labor market, then we can see how we can how we can enlarge that. But yeah. now it's the other way around. We prohibit people who live here.
Yeah.
We blame refugees,
yeah.
which are not the majority of numbers.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
we let people from other countries, from the EU, from Poland, from other countries,
flood the country. Come in,
and nobody talks about them.
Yeah.
So it's a very, you know, so it's a very crooked analysis.
Yeah.
Where I do think that we have to be honest and we have to be fair.
Yeah.
Our policy has been make sure that people who are here and who have not been able to work, make sure they can work. Even refugees, when they come, they are prohibited to work full time.
Yes.
So, but that doesn't make sense, because if you want them to work and to integrate,
yeah.
let them work full time.
Yes.
So we need to change these regulations to make sure that people, when they come in, they can integrate properly, have enough finances so they can finance their own household. Mm. And from there, if we need more, I'm okay with that. It's not something that we are anti
my
but the situation now, it's not an honest situation.
Yes.
It is
very pathetic the way it's not a holistic approach to the whole thing.
Yes.
Do you want to say something?
Yeah, because I'm wondering why they have to limit them to this level. No, why must they limit them to this? Is it that they are afraid that if the refugees begin to work full time, they are going to have much money or what?
Well, a lot of parties, right parties, they feel that we need to scare people away so that they will not ask for asylum in the Netherlands. So we have a lot of measurements that aren't very logical, but they are meant to scare people off from not coming to the Netherlands. So if you come, the message is when you come, you cannot work full time. So you have to stay away or go to Germany or to another country. Another message is when you come, we only have one place, that is Ter Apel, where you can ask. By the border of Germany, where people have to go to and register the first time. It's a choice to scare people away so that they don't come and ask asylum in the Netherlands. But when you look at the research, every research is saying that whatever policy you put into place, people do not decide based on that whether they come to the Netherlands or to Belgium or to Germany. There are other reasons for them to make that choice. Not whether if they can work full time or not. So these are regulations put in place that are not effective. Actually, they are damaging the possibility of people of integrating, because if you were not able to work full time and you are still in the procedure for many years, when you finally get your citizenship, it will be more difficult for you to access the labor market full time. So it's very damaging. And you see that, unfortunately, a lot of people from some groups, they are living on welfare. And every citizen has that doesn't have work is entitled to welfare. So that is something that is okay. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it be much smarter that if people can work from day one,
yeah.
they can integrate, they can work with an employee, they can have that relationship, that when they get the citizenship, they can continue based on the skills that they have already acquired the last couple of years. That would be much smarter. And I think also it will reduce the people who have not been able to find a steady work. Yeah. So it's also beneficial for the Netherlands as a country.
Yeah. Recently, we're in a session and we're talking about poverty and finances in society. And I think I came to the conclusion that, and that for me was maybe a conspiracy theory. I said, it looks like having poverty in society is also a structural plan of most government to have some people poor, you know, because if we really want to eliminate poverty, there are many ways or a more holistic way to go about it. But to structurally ignore certain segments of society and to make sure they're in a position whereby they cannot rise to a certain level, sometimes it's like it's intentional. That is my opinion anyway. But, you know, the way you're looking at this, discussing this, I think, yeah, the government sometimes enjoys having people in this particular situation.
Yes, it's a structure. It's meant to be that way. They remain poor. They can't go beyond that level.
I don't know if it's an actual choice, but I think it's like a just the way we have our political system in place at the moment. There are like loads of people who are doing well. They don't want to change anything, so they keep voting for the same parties. And they only think about their own voters, and they think those are richer, they're living in nicer houses, and they don't have any problems except for how can I pay not too much taxes. So if you have like a party, if you've got a large amount of people who are doing well in this country and they keep voting for parties who do their who make sure that they are keep doing well, then nothing will change.
I'm just wondering, hypothetically, if let's say we want to, this scenario we are looking at right now, can you give me a hypothetical scenario which can alter this status quo and bring it to maybe a more balanced and realistic situation? Maybe give it a party configuration we have now. Can we just do a hypothetical, proposal? What kind of setting? Let's suppose we go to the polls, and what sort of outcome might bring a change to a more realistic and balanced political situation? Who is willing to take
it? If you ask me, you need to vote for progressive, bit of left wing parties who wants to change people's lives, who see that we have a climate problem, who wants to actually talk to people and do something about it and make actual decisions instead of, you know, just looking away and hoping that so problems will solve itself.
So
I think if people will vote left, more and more left than they are doing at the moment, or like left progressive, then I think the outcome of the next election will be better.
Now, what do you think?
Well, if you ask me, if the Christian becomes the biggest party, then we will solve a lot of these issues. So I think it's very simple concerning that. But I do think when it comes to social economic points, I think it's very important that we need to realize a change. And for nowadays, the VVD has always been the biggest as a liberal party.
Yeah.
But when you look at the social economic agenda, it does not help the people who are currently struggling.
Yes.
So I do think that that a change is necessary. And you can look at it from different parties way, from different ways. I've also expressed that as a Christian, we're very vocal on reducing poverty. We've also been trying to doing that the last couple of years. We also introduced a minister of poverty to really focus on this issue that we need to tackle it. So we will continue to do that. At the same time, we also have to realize that not every party that has social economic standpoints are the same party. I mean, we do agree on these things. Maybe we'll also agree on certain things on migration. But let's say for the Christian Union, the name says it, we are a Christian party and we value also the family when it comes to making sure that that is the core of the policies, that families and children have enough, not only to eat, but that parents have enough opportunities to make sure that they can make sure that their household is growing strong. So, and also there you will see some differences between the Christian Union, but also maybe Volt or other parties. So I think it's very important to also
really read into the election programs, because you will read a lot of similarities, but also some differences where I think it is important for people to know about, so that you can make the choice that is, that's also very important to accommodate the things that you really think is very important.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, if sometimes like the election programs are a bit complicated to read for some people, just reach out to a party. Like for instance, if people reach out to me and I ask me, can you please explain what's in our election, your election program, I would be very happy to do that. And I think that goes for every party. So if you think, well, I don't actually think it's too complicated, what says here, it's too long, can you just give me the highlights, then every party will be more than happy to explain the election program to you in person.
Okay.
The proposal that Magritte gave, proposal of 200 refugees at a time for the country. Why didn't you people accept that?
Sorry, what did he say?
The proposal he gave for 200 refugees to be accepted into the country. On a monthly basis. Why didn't you other parties accept it? Because I think it would have been better than for long.
Okay. Let me clarify that.
If you can rephrase the question, please, because
let's do that.
I don't understand it yet.
No, neither do I.
Okay. The question was that, can you hear me, please? Mark Rutte is alleged to have made a proposal for a cap on the number of refugees to about 200 on a monthly basis. I think it has to do with the reunion issue of families, okay? Yeah, I think he proposed a cap of 200 people monthly. I don't know whether you've seen that, but that is what the media says. So she was asking why don't the other parties accept that? Or doesn't that look nice or workable for the other parties? That was the question.
Well, we can't, because we signed the international treaty. So we can't cap the number of refugees. We need to allow refugees into the country. We can't say we only do 200 a month. Because what would you do with the 201st person who comes here? For instance, from Yemen or something, you just say, well, you go back. You're just one too many. You can't do that. We have international treaties in place. We have agreements within the EU that we are obligated to have refugees enter the country and give them a humane treatment and give them a place, a safe place to stay. And allowing them to ask for asylum. You can't just say we don't oblige with the international treaties anymore.
It's
not possible.
You have a point there. Yeah. Okay, I want us to fast forward. Let's talk about the Farmers Party, the BBB. I think they took the country by storm, you know, with the way the number of seats they won in the Senate. How much are they of a threat to the current system? You think they're going to shake up the upcoming election in a big way? What do you think?
No, I don't think. They're already down in the polls.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe last year at the provincial elections, they had their momentum and people voted for them. But if you look at the polls now, they're only at 9 seats left. So I don't think they're going to shake up the second chamber as much as they did with provincial elections.
All right. Do you think so, Don?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Yeah, I
think so. You see already the polls shifting.
Yeah.
So I think for the next couple of weeks, I think it's very, I think a lot of changes, it's going to be very tight because you have several developments in the country and in the world. So I don't know where it's going to land. So, but when you look at the analysis that BBB has peaked too early. Because you see, it's already dropping.
Wow.
So if you ask me, I don't think that they will be become the biggest.
Mm.
At the same time, if you ask me who will be the biggest, I'm also not sure.
Sure. Yeah.
Only thing I can do is, as a Christian Union, present what we stand for.
Yeah.
Reducing social economic problems. We're a family party.
Mm-hmm.
And also when it comes to churches, we are very vocal about ensuring the position of churches in society, because we do feel they also contribute to what is necessary in society, that people are also being taken care of, not only by society, but also by communities. I think that's very critical, especially in these times. So we will go out on the streets. We will campaign in Amsterdam and other cities. And hopefully on the 22nd of November, people will choose wisely. And I hope that with enough seats, the Christian Union can have a big impact in the next couple of years.
Yes. I wanted to for us to quickly touch on the nitrogen pollution issue and the farm buyout. What is the stand of your party on this issue? Maybe Astrid first and then Don, please.
We are a very green, very climate-oriented party.
Mm-hmm.
We think the nitrogen issue is very... very problematic, as is the clean water issue at the moment, which is also something that is going to be a big problem. So yeah, we think something needs to be done with it. We need to help farmers adjust their policy of business to make sure that there are less cattle and that they transfer their companies, if they transfer their farms into environmental friendly farms.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do, and we do think that the nitrogen doesn't stop at the border. So also here goes, we need to be more together in Europe, because nitrogen comes from Germany to Holland as well, or from Holland to Germany. You need to be within the EU.
Yeah.
You need to work together to tackle this issue.
Okay. But really, you can see that the demonstrations, the protests which have been ongoing for a long time, I don't know whether it's still on, blocking the A12 and all that. I mean, this has been the issue they've been dealing with. Apparently, people are not satisfied with the government's stance on it. And so I'm not sure how that's going to affect the upcoming elections. Then what's your take?
Do you mean the blocking of the A12 by farmers or by extinct rebellion?
Yeah. Well, it's not connected with the environment as well.
Yes, it's connected with the environment. I think what the government did not do well is actually talk to the farmers and explain why such things are necessary. And that allowed populists to grab their momentum and make people even more angrier. And a government who did nothing at all to help those concerns, because their concerns are legitimate, their concerns are valid, and I mean their anger is valid as well, but you need to work together anyway. So I think that's something that you need to do much more. You need to include those farmers, you need to include not only the farmers but also the people who are living around, or people who are living in the city. We need to work together, we need to have more We need to involve people much more than we are doing at the moment. You just can't say as a government this is something we're going to do and just deal with it. You need to communicate better. And if you see what happened for the last couple of years, the environment just had the agreements, the treaties we signed within the EU concerning the nitrogen, we just ignored them. We just thought, well, we did sign those treaties, we did make those agreements, but we're not obligated to do something about it. And now you see, we are obligated to do something about it. And now there's pressure. We need to hurry. So that's what the anger is coming from. If you did something early, if you didn't wait too long,
yes,
you included those people who are now so very scared for the businesses, then I don't think that they would have that momentum that they had in the provincial elections.
Wow. Okay. Don, you share the same opinion?
Yes, I do think that... two things. I think that, yes, people are concerned about the future of the planet. So you see also that a lot of people are demonstrating whether farmers or whether people who feel that the government hasn't been doing enough. So I think there's something to say about that, because when you look at the future of the planet, when you look at the seasons changing, not only here, but also countries where a lot of migrants come from. My mother's from Ghana, my father's from Suriname. Even the effects of climate change will be even bigger there. And then it also causes effects there, which will eventually also cause effect here in socioeconomic situation. So I do think those are important themes. At the other side, when I talk to people on the streets, especially here in Amsterdam Southeast, people do think about the climate, but they are saying, a lot of people tell me, how can I think about climate change if I need to think about how I'm going to pay the rent this week? Just to be honest, a lot of people think about that too. I want to think about these things, but who is taking care of me, the children, and how can I have two jobs and at the end of the month I cannot still not pay my bills?
Yeah.
See, so for a lot of people, these discussions also come to what are their first needs. And with a lot of people, who I'm talking to, they are saying, please, if we are able to tackle the social economic situations, mm-hmm. that people don't have to struggle with how they're going to pay their bills at the end of the month, that also creates room to think about their community. And if they have room to think about the community, they can also think about larger things like that. Also what happens in the world and when it comes to climate change. So these things are important. And I do think that we need to take the necessary steps, because we also have a responsibility to give the world to the next generation in livable conditions. Mm-hmm. So as a Christian Union, you can read our party program. We have a lot of measures that we need to take, which I think are very effective.
Mm-hmm.
But like I'm saying, a lot of people are voting in mind with other issues as a priority. So I do think that if you really want to tackle also the climate issue aspects, that you have to come to grips with the reality that for a lot of people, the socioeconomic priorities, having dealt with them, becomes a gateway for them to also
open their focus
on the climate matter.
Well, got it. Okay, let's quickly touch on the minimum wage issue. I think Christian Uni has a recommendation or plan to increase the minimum wage.